Hi, everybody. Welcome to the National Center for Family Philanthropy's monthly topical call for the Community Foundations Network. This call series is on the second Tuesday of the month at 2 p.m. Eastern for no more than 1 hour. This is your opportunity to learn from your peers, ask questions of each other, and provide your own insights and tips on the topic of the day. I'm Catherine Scott, Program Director for the Community Foundations Network and your call facilitator today. Just a few quick call logistics before we get started, so just give me just a moment to bear with me for housekeeping. Your lines are open. That means your phone is not muted. I highly suggest that you mute yourself if you need to. You can mute either through the phone or through the control panel on Zoom. So if you're on your computer, you can mute on the computer, or you can mute just straight up through your phone control panel. This is meant to be an interactive conversation, and we hope you'll jump in. You can jump in by unmuting your phone and just saying hi. Remember to say your city name and your name. So for example, Catherine Scott, Washington, D.C., when you say a question or share your own insights. We'll record this call and add this to your network's Dropbox folder for the folks who missed it. Just let me know if you need help accessing the Dropbox and folder of resources. Before we get started on today's topic, and before we introduce our three fabulous speakers, I'd like to ask if we could do a quick round of introductions. I can just see parts of your phone numbers and parts of your names in the control panel, so I'm going to call out area codes and keyword usernames, and just ask if you can say just your who you are and your foundation name, so that folks can know who else has joined with us here today, if that's okay. So I'll go ahead and I'll try to get to everybody. We'll just say hi, and then we'll hear about 5 minutes from each speaker, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Why don't we go ahead and start with Killens SR?
Robert Killens, Greater Cincinnati Foundation.
Thank you. 478,
area code 478. That might be me, Nancy Cleveland, with the Community Foundation of Central Georgia. And I also have my colleagues, Julia Wood and Boyd Elrod here.
Perfect. Thank you. And we've got Barrett.
Hey, Barrett Christ, Senior Philanthropic Officer, Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta.
And I should have asked, if you guys have a question for our speakers, please chime in and share that question now so they can know as they're speaking at the beginning. Can I ask Aaron, can you say hi?
Hi, it's Aaron Bourne with the Community Foundation of Atlanta.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us, Aaron. Scott Kaplan?
Hi, Scott Kaplan, President and CEO of the Tidewater Jewish Foundation, Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Virginia.
Awesome, thank you. Shannon Scott?
Hi, this is Rebecca Rothy actually speaking for Shannon, Vice President of Development at the Greater Washington Community Foundation.
Thank you for joining us, Rebecca. Sorry, it says Shannon on the screen, I apologize.
No worries, I'm using her logon, so it's fine.
503?
Hi, this is Oregon Community Foundation. We've got Jennifer Curry, Janessa Dodema, and Donna Arison here.
Perfect. I've got Sarah Ford here that doesn't have a microphone from Petoskey Harbor Springs Area Community Foundation in Michigan. So she'll be chatting in her questions and we'll be her voice here at NCFP. We've also got Kelly with an I.
Hi, that's me, Kelly Doyle from the Greater Kansas City Community Foundation.
I'm sorry to pick on you, Kelly, but we have two Kelly with a Y's today. We also have Julia.
Hey, that's me. I'm with the Community Foundation of Central Georgia in Macon.
Perfect. And then we actually, NCFP has our fellows that are actually focusing on a variety of different topics, and this is related to their research. So I wanted to introduce, I had invited them to join us today. So Kelly Nolan. And June, do you each want to say hi, Kelly?
Hi, everybody. Kelly Nolan. I'm a trustee of the CERNA Foundation, but a fellow right now working on racial equity in the field of family philanthropy on behalf of NCF. And that rhymes. How top that, June.
I don't think I can. I'm June Wilson, also an NCFP fellow. Happy to join the call today.
And I know I didn't say our three speakers, but can I ask, did I miss anybody else? And I'm sure I did. just your name, foundation, and if you have any questions for today. Susan and A. Vroom.
Yes, I'm Susan Willie, and I'm with Greater Cedar Rapids Community Foundation.
Thank you. And A. Vroom? I'm sure that's someone who's on the phone and in their AV room. I apologize. So why don't we go ahead? So the format for the call today is we'll hear about 5 minutes from each of our three speakers that are just bringing their perspective in the field and in the work and some cool experiences for us. And then we'll just have a dialogue and discussion. So first I wanna actually have Ted from the Springfield Foundation share. He is the executive director of the foundation and is going to be able to share about their foundation and their work in history. And just because there's a lot of Springfields, it's Springfield, Ohio. So Ted, can you get started and share a little bit about how your African American Community Foundation work came to be and just a little bit about your experience? You've been at the foundation for quite a number of years.
Sure, be happy to. Yeah. Our fund, it's called the African American Community Fund, and we started it in 2004. Actually, this is the 15th year anniversary of starting the fund, and it was started by a group of African American males that were on our board. They decided that they just wanted to have something that was a little bit more organized philanthropy to help out with African American donors and also then to address some of the African American needs in the community. So what we did back in 2004 is we set up a challenge grant or a challenge for them that we would give $12,500 a year or $50,000 or $25,000 over 2 years for every dollar that they raised to come into funds. And what we did with the $25,000 was we created an unrestricted fund here, and then they use that unrestricted fund to pay out on it every year to do grants. So they raised over $52,000 in less than 2 years. So they did start out with the fund. Right now, there are about 10 endowment funds under the affiliates umbrella with around $400,000. And their unrestricted fund has grown up to a balance of about $70,000. So the we call it the AACF. So the AACF is an affiliate of the Springfield Foundation. So they're underneath us, and they use our 501c3 status. They have their own governing committee with bylaws and have up to 12 members. They meet on a regular basis. We provide staff support and finance. We did provide financial support for about the first 7 years just to get them up and get them off the ground, and, you know, to get them running. And they've handed out grants over that whole time, totaling about $35,000. Some of the grants that they've done have been focused on homelessness, youth programs, mobile mammography, and then reading programs. So they have their own grants committee that gets applications in. They go through the process and award the grants every year. They also have a gala every year, and that's probably one of the bigger things that they do. For the African American community, they really like to have to get together to celebrate and just to, you know, to see each other and to enjoy the time together. And they've done that every year. So this year in June, they always have it on June, around June 15th. It's called the Juneteenth. And they have it that they usually have around 200 people at least attend this event every year. And they also honor different people from the community at the event. We've done a lot of development efforts with the African American Community Fund. We've had small receptions. We call them in-home receptions, where you go to someone's house or to have a it's a smaller, intimate kind of informal meeting with donors, maybe 12 to 15 people. We actually had one reception on a boat on the Ohio River once. We've also had informational seminars. So we've had banks sponsor these seminars to come and just talk about planned giving and different types of things. We've had several church presentations. The African American Community Fund also has a Legacy Society. And so the Legacy Society is set up for those individuals that mention the AACF in their estate plans. And they currently have 11 members in their AACF Legacy Society. We have a culture fest every fall, and they have a booth downtown, which is a multicultural event. They've supported the minority health fair, and they've also teamed up. We have a place here in town called the Gammon House, which was on the Underground Railroad. So they team up with them to have an open house and to kind of have a neighborhood celebration every year. So it's been a pretty, they're a pretty active group. I've had to, we were providing a lot more support with them for over the years, and I kind of had to push them out of the nest, if you will. So the one lesson learned would be to have a plan in your head if you're going to set something up like this, that they have to start doing some of the stuff on their own. And they're doing a lot more on their own now, so it seems to be moving a lot better. So it's mainly just like a small foundation under our foundation that focuses on African-American events and ideas in the community. That's about it in a nutshell. Any questions, comments?
That's awesome, Ted. I think that'll give people lots of opportunity to ask you lots of questions about how you guys got started and where you got to be. Why don't we, right. If it's all right, we'll learn from Kelly and then Sharmila, sure. And then we'll just let people ask all sorts of questions that are on their mind and I think how they get started on any of these efforts. So Kelly Brown is the director of the D5 Coalition and has great experience across this work, and I'll let Kelly just share a little bit more about their work with diverse donors.
Great. Thanks so much, Katie, and to the Center for this opportunity. It's always great to talk to a whole phone full of people who are exploring these issues. As Katie said, I was the director of the D5 Coalition, which it was a five-year effort to strengthen philanthropy through a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it built on many, many decades of work in the field around this. But I think what was unique about the D5 effort was we really tried to highlight some specific areas where we wanted to effect change. And for folks who remember or just learning about D5, the website is still up, by the way. We really were looking at senior leadership and making senior leadership more more representative. We were looking at better data and better knowledge around how the field was doing with respect to diversity and inclusion. We were really trying to, I guess, sort of curate and aggregate good practice around changing, strengthening foundation practice in terms of grant making and internal practice around to support diversity, equity, and inclusion. And then the fourth goal was to increase resources to diverse communities. And that entailed, when we outlined the strategy, really thinking about how we define, like, who is a philanthropist and strengthening the philanthropic capacity of a broader and more diverse array of folks to both give and to have their giving understood. So much of the work that we ended up focusing on through the D5 initiative was working with individuals from a broader range of communities who were philanthropic and showcasing their approach to philanthropy and to the, you know, having a more diverse understanding of what philanthropy means. I think for the purposes of this call, and I think maybe a lot of the folks who are listening are thinking about, you know, working at community foundations and how do they really broaden and expand their community of donors to be more reflective of the communities they're serving. And I often tell people that, you know, we use the term diverse donors or diverse candidates or diverse people, and diverse really isn't a characteristic of an individual. It's really a characteristic of a context, right? And so I would encourage people to sort of reshape the framing of that conversation to really think about how do we make our donor community more diverse and inclusive and representative. And a lot of that work entails understanding how different communities give and manifest their philanthropy. But in many cases, it also entails, I think, sort of managing or at least examining our understanding, perhaps our assumptions about how certain communities give, and to some degree sort of interrogating a little bit some of the stereotypes that we may have about philanthropy in different communities. Just as the gentleman who spoke before was speaking about the African American Community Fund, and yet the things that they were funding were things that a lot of donors fund and might care about in terms of reading and mammography and health and education. So I think as what we learned from our exploration was, yes, there are absolutely elements of how different communities manifest their philanthropy, but I think the most successful efforts to think about diversifying your donor base is to really understand who they are as individuals and to approach them as givers and as you would trying to understand the things that concern them, just like you would any other donor. And I would also add that it's important, I think, to really build the human resource capacity of your donor outreach and donor support teams so that you have the benefit of a broad range of experiences from different communities as part of your knowledge base and in engaging the donors that you want to see around the table. And that moves beyond, I'm sort of very careful in framing my suggestion, is because it's not just recruiting more diverse people, it's really actually building a culture that allows the diverse perspectives and experiences to really inform your strategies and your approach to fundraising and to engaging donors in your community. So let me stop there, and I can say more if people have questions once we move into that part of the conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kelly, and thank you for sharing your insights. Third, but not last or not least, we have Sharmila here to speak with us, who's been the executive director and leader of a family foundation, who's worked with donor families individually as a consultant, and who has amazing experience across the field. So we'll have Sharmila do the same and speak for a short time, and then we'll have a discussion.
Thanks so much, Catherine. I'm really honored to be with you all. So a little bit about my background. Prior to leading a family foundation in Chicago for about a decade, I actually worked on the nonprofit side in programs and communications around health, women, families, and specifically the Asian American community. While I crossed to the other side to work in philanthropy, I continued to sit on boards of nonprofits and specifically a community foundation for women in Chicago, where I got sort of my first take in bringing diverse donors into philanthropy. I worked with the young women's giving, I guess it was a giving circle. We used to call it a leadership circle, leadership council, and then chaired for a long time and helped grow our Asian giving, Asian women's giving, and then ultimately it became a women of color giving circle. And through that work, really started to learn a little bit about what it takes to bring diverse donors into philanthropy. We did a lot of work around understanding their motivations, trying to, as Kelly said, not make assumptions about why and how people give and where they give. A lot of this started through conversations, frankly. At that time, because of the work I was doing at the Family Foundation, I also became very involved in next gen and millennial philanthropy. And so through the work that I was doing formally at the foundation, began exploring how we bring young people into the work in diverse communities as well. Currently, I am based in Chicago. I'm in New York. I left Chicago a couple of years ago, and I do consulting work around philanthropic values and grant-making guidance for families and individual donors, governance and leadership development, and trying to build board diversity as well. And really what I found, and again, this builds on a lot of what you've already heard, but when I meet people at, they're typically at the beginning of their philanthropic journey, or they're trying to reassess how they've been giving, or they're trying to bring in their children or additional family members into their work. So I always say that starting to understand their motivations is key. I have some formal processes around understanding and helping them live out their values and matching kind of their vision to what their grant making ultimately looks like. But it starts with getting to know what their understanding of giving back is, any limitations and barriers They have testing assumptions. And frankly, you know, with a lot of the donors I work with, there is a little bit of discomfort and, if I can go so far as to say, taboo around wealth and what wealth looks like, what money has meant to not only their families or them individually, but the communities that they live in. There's a lot of diversity within communities as well. Many folks label Asians as the model minority, and clearly, you know, communities look different. And so when we think about giving back, we like to explore what giving back in different communities look like. And our definition is wide. It's time, talent, treasure, and ties. And we make the point, especially when we were working in bringing young people into philanthropy and building a culture of philanthropy, that it's not necessarily about how much money that you have. It's about the desire to do good and make a difference. I also want to make a distinction around something that I see very clearly is where the giving happens, particularly as community foundations. You're working with donors in your own backyard and bringing new people into the work. Sometimes I hear community foundations talk about the challenge. I have one particular client that actually has a donor advised fund at a community foundation. And one of the challenges she had with the community foundation was trying to give internationally and at the same time give in her own backyard. And it turned out actually to be a very fruitful experience of education and learning on both sides. Having the help of the community foundation do the due diligence and help her establish avenues to give where this other passion sort of lays for her. And I think in my own work, I often see families or donors conflicted about how to, especially when they're bringing in next gen, give back locally and in their own communities where or while they might consider home somewhere else. And so again, I think that thinking about all of these things when you have the conversations and do the exploration with donors, it really makes a difference. For me, it's about meeting them where they're at and understanding how, you know, and I think of diversity more than just, you know, age, generation. I think of life stages, gender, obviously, background, wealth, and sort of the impact that they want to have in community and what they define as community. I find that creating space for difference is really important. What philanthropy might look like traditionally, and particularly because I worked with a very traditional, at the start, family foundation, I find that the way I used to work doesn't necessarily always look the same in some of these new communities that I'm in some cases bringing philanthropy to. Patience and trust is built through patience. It takes time. I think that transparency and being candid and inviting them, really creating space at the table to explore ideas together, has really made a difference. I find whether they're these new donors by next generation or coming from different communities, there's a focus more on the relationships than there is the transactional nature of giving, which again, I think that is something we're seeing across the board, but I wanted to call that out because it's something that's really important to me when I try to meet my donors where they're at. They're also looking for new and different ways to give in community. So whether that be next gen groups or affinity groups, reaching out to folks that want to give together by business or professional background or by race or ethnicity, I think that it's really important to have people at the table that look like them, understand where they're coming from, and that the messages and approaches are really personalized. And I think that, you know, I actually advise a lot of my clients or those that come to me to look at their community foundations, because I feel like the wealth of resources within communities is so strong. And many of your foundations can actually, I think, meet the values and the vision and the mission of giving in community very, very deeply. I just have found that some of them don't even think about that. And so when I talk to some community foundation members, I really think that focusing on communications and the way that you talk about your work, that might be new ways of technology, that might be showing up in circles or communities that you might not engage these new and diverse donors. education programs, you know, kind of thinking outside of the box and bringing your work to communities, because oftentimes our communities aren't looking there. And so that is, I think, a really critical piece of kind of creating new spaces and making matches for donors to think about giving in new and different ways and actually maximizing their potential impact in this way. Those are just some of my key thoughts. I'm really looking forward to answering questions and having a conversation.
Well, thank you, Sharmila. We already have our first question from Rob from Central Indiana Foundation, and he kindly typed it in as he was thinking and hearing all of you guys. And you can definitely type. I know one of you doesn't have a microphone capability, so or a phone. Like, you can't talk because you just have the computer. But Rob wrote, he was interested in, Kelly, what is your advice and some of the resources D5 recommends for a 100-year-old white power institution to begin creating relationships in communities of color in order to build trust, and how our community foundation can come alongside them? We've just begun the process of relationship and trust building and looking at every suggestion possible.
Great. Well, I'm sure anyone could, or folks could certainly chime in. But one, I think the first step that you've already taken is really critical, which is to think about how you build relationships with communities. I think too often, or individuals within communities, I think too often we start with the sort of transactional relationship that we want to forge without really sort of understanding what it means to understand different communities. I think a lot of it is really being in place, being in the communities that you want to build relationships with, and not necessarily assuming or expecting or always kind of inviting folks into your space. It's as much about you being present in other spaces. And for me, I think one of the things that I've observed over the years is that when we think about quote unquote diversifying our contexts, one, we have to get over a lot of assumptions, not only assumptions that people may have about communities that they're not familiar with, but also concerns about how those communities see, as you describe it, 100-year-old, white male-led organization. It takes a bit of courage, and I think, for lack of a better word, willingness to be vulnerable to challenge some of those assumptions. But I think when you're really willing to be in space, whether it's cultural spaces, whether it's events, whether it's being proactive and reaching out to the boards of organizations that you respect that reflect those communities and saying, we're trying to, we really want to be representative of the full community that we're living in. I think you'll find that there will be an openness, but it won't be necessarily a quick or easy road. I often say there's no sort of manual to, like, here's the manual to deal with Latinos, and here's the manual to deal with Black people, and here's the manual to deal with Asians. It really is about appreciating that we're all having to build the muscle of how do we live and create authentically diverse and inclusive spaces and contexts, and that requires all of us to be a little bit vulnerable. But I believe that with sincerity and with some authenticity, you can start to build those relationships.
Thank you. Who has questions or comments?
Well, I think it could also be a little more formal with his approach and have people, serve on different committees of the foundation, certainly board members, and also look at sponsorships. There are always, different groups looking for different things that they're putting on. You can always start out with sponsorships, but you got to get your name out in front of people. So I think you have to be a little more formal with it too.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm curious. Do your community foundations have giving circles or leadership affinity by affinity groups?
Well, we have the African American Community Fund. We also have a Women's Fund, And then there's a woman's giving circle also that meets just to raise the money for that meeting, and they choose a project. We have all three of those.
What about others? We've got Central Georgia, Central Indiana. We've got a bunch here, Atlanta. Do you guys have affinity groups or giving circles?
This is Robert in Cincinnati. We've had an African-American fund for about 25 years, going back to the early 90s, and probably almost 8 million in funds. But we are launching our first giving circle later this year.
That's great.
What other questions do you guys have, or do you want to share about your funds?
Is this work that folks are actively trying to embark upon in their foundations? Or do you have challenges, perhaps, currently that you're trying to get through when you think about diverse donors?
This is Rob in Indianapolis at Central Indiana Community Foundation. And thanks, Kelly, for answering my first question that I typed in. And Katie, thanks for reading it. We have just had we've spent the last 2.5 years looking internally as to who we are and the type of community foundation we wanted to be in the next 100 years. And our board has been really encouraging and pushing us to look at the specific communities that we want to benefit from the region's philanthropy. And we've had a very significant mission change and strategic programmatic shift around race and race disparities in particular. And so we're looking at all aspects of our operations in how to engage more people of color in our work, how me and my team in the development and philanthropic services and resources area, how we can reach out to more people of color as far as opening funds or giving circles. We didn't feel like, again, as a 100-year-old white male-led institution, that we could start our own or try to start a African-American giving circle or a Latino giving circle or whatever. So we're just trying to create relationships to have them happen organically and come from within whatever community wants to start that. And we do have the beginnings of an African-American Legacy Fund of Indianapolis cohort of about 60 donors right now who are coming together, and they've decided to do a giving circle and build an endowment at the same time, and we're helping facilitate that. So this is being This is being pushed out into all aspects of our foundation, and you know, obviously engaging communities of color in the philanthropic side of it all, and funds and giving money away as need be is really, really important and something we're working on.
Well, kudos to you for that.
Ted, I know that when you were sharing, I kept thinking about how the fund feels like, I mean, it feels community-led. And I will say NCFP, we have Sharmila even pulled in on one of our, Sharmila is serving on one of our planning committees this year. And it's an effort, it's the first time we've had a planning committee for a conference we're doing at NCFP. And so I guess, I know that process is hard as you hear Rob talk and others, and I guess, it feels like your work on AACF is community led now, as opposed to maybe staff supported or right. Staff come about, I guess. And I pick on our committee process for this one conference we're doing because, you know, it's hard to start committee work, right? How have you guys gotten to the place where you have made it more community led so that it's not your initiative?
Well, it's a little complicated because you want them to take over and take charge, but on the other hand, it's still under us, and so when they do something, you got to be careful that you want it to be successful and to look good in the community. So it's kind of a fine line, but I just had to have meetings with them and more or less just set expectations as to when they were going to, you know, have to start doing a little bit more on their own. I don't know if that helps.
It does, and I think it's hard. But what other questions do people have? Because I think you've definitely been through it. And Sharmila typing a bunch of resources into the chat box, and I typed in a bunch of web links. So I'll also make sure those go out in your newsletter, just so everybody here knows, and in your Dropbox.
This is Kelly Nolan. I have a question for anybody more broadly, and or any wisdom that the speakers might want to share. But curious if some have been are aware of the giving project model versus the giving circle model, and really examining a cross-class, cross-race giving structure that allows that to, you know, have decisions really embedded more at the community level and brings in diverse perspectives and viewpoints. And it's a model that I'm really intrigued by and interested in lifting up for next-gen family members and giving families, and more broadly about how that really creates more, quote, proximity to the work and the needs in community. And so curious if those, if anybody or any organization, any community foundations have thought about a giving project model versus a giving circle.
I can jump in a little bit on that, is because I think, Kelly, there is a fairly long tradition of efforts around philanthropic efforts that have really tried to cross those, you know, both race, class, gender, sexual orientation kind of divides. I don't know how many people are familiar with the foundations that used to be around the funding exchange model, but they emerged in the 1970s, grew out of the activities of the 60s to really have philanthropy be more, as they would have framed it, more democratic, and built several structures that still exist actually around the country. They're relatively small, but they're in local areas where the boards and giving committees of these foundations are exactly as you described, donors and community folks and people from a range of perspectives and experiences are actually sitting around the table raising resources. Sometimes I'm a little bit sad that the story of that movement hasn't really been told, I think, adequately, because it really did lay a foundation for a model of philanthropy that is less about inviting people into a certain situation, but really kind of co-creating a different philanthropic model. I don't know, though, if people have seen Grant Craft produced a report, I think it was toward the end of last year, called Deciding Together. The title is Deciding Together, Shifting Power and Resources Through Participatory Grant Making. And they kind of survey similar sorts of principles and practices, and how foundations that and funds that manifest in lots of different kinds of formats, whether they're freestanding foundations, whether they're funds within other funds, of really kind of creating a space where people are sharing power and sharing resources and sharing decision making across a lot of these arenas of difference. And I think it is something, a model that younger donors, newer donors are much more interested in trying to to take up or at least explore.
Thanks, Kelly.
I posted this in the chat, but Kelly, I'm sure you've heard of the Donors of Color Collaborative. Mm-hmm. That's an effort that's also trying to bring, I mean, it's donors of color, so not necessarily cross, but you know, there's a ton of identity, race and ethnic identity focused giving circles, giving groups and whatnot. And this initiative is trying to bring high net worth donors of color around one table to identify priorities and learn together and give together I'm not actively involved, but I've used it as a resource and a model, and I've worked with the organizers a little bit. And I think that, you know, there's challenges when you try to build collaboratives, because philanthropy is deeply personal, and as wealth is also a, for many communities, a very private matter. And so some of the challenges around giving in partnership, and Kelly, you could probably speak to this from some of the work you've done with D5. I think it's important to recognize that when you try to bring communities together. And when we think about successful initiatives, I think those that ensure that there's representation from all around the table, I mean, that's pretty basic, but I want to reiterate how important that is. And because sometimes as we do this work as from the outside or other, those are the initiatives I think that stall or get have to reset. And leadership from within, I think, is also something that I've seen really makes a difference when we're trying to launch new work or we're trying to work in collaboration with diverse communities. Again, it seems so basic, but I also feel like it's something that we sometimes forget, because the bigger agenda is this is good and it needs to happen and we're going to make a difference. And I think, again, it sounds basic, but meeting people where they're at and ensuring that they are themselves crafting the agenda and what it looks like, and that it takes time to really get people on the same page, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think all of these resources are so helpful, but I do think that people do need to understand that there's no one size fits all. And
yeah,
that really approaching this really has to come from a place for everyone, not just kind of mainstream, dominant, you know, majority culture kinds of frames. Everyone has to approach creating a more inclusive spaces from a place of humility and learning and curiosity, and being willing to lean in and listen to what folks really want. I see a hand raised. Katie, I don't know if you're seeing that.
That might be me. This is Rebecca, Greater Washington Community Foundation. And just wanted to share that we have had a number of giving circles. Right now we have a cherry blossom giving circle, which is focused in the Asian American community and pretty self-sufficient, but something that we're happy to be a sponsorship for or a sponsor for. And we're in the process now of launching an LGBTQ+ fund for philanthropy. And just wanted to share that I appreciate the comments around inclusivity. We approached this rather cautiously and ended up working with a consultant who's highly respected in that space and brought a lot of partners to what we called working group conversations to explore whether or not there was a receptivity to creating such a fund in this region. We actually have the largest LGBTQ+ community outside of San Francisco. And we wanted to get a sense of whether or not this is something where it was appropriate for us to play a leadership role. So very importantly, the sort of very early feedback that we got is that the effort had to be diverse, not only across the LGBTQ+ spectrum, but also for race and gender. And so the folks that we were able to bring to the table represented almost every kind of sector of the community in that regard. And happy to share that this has been very, very well received. And many of the sort of initial conversations are around exactly this question of inclusivity, including sort of the relationship between the grantors and the grantees, you know, because there's often a power differential, you know, between those communities and, you know, who should be the decision makers, particularly on the grant making side of this effort. And also, I think folks are very sensitive to this, not in any way taking away from existing funding that's already going into the LGBTQ+ community, but that this be additive in its net effort, and that it have a very strong educational focus, which would be the kind of one other aspect of this, which I think we may not have talked about that much yet, but, you know, people need to learn how to be philanthropic. And one of the reasons, not everybody, but often, you know, philanthropy is a learned behavior, and sort of getting to that, what is my why that we've been talking about is a journey. And people around the table are very aware that this provides an opportunity to really provide education to participants that whether or not they give directly through this funding collaborative, which is probably going to what it end up being, they will still actually increase philanthropy in the region, which has been shared with me that other community foundations that have done this have had that experience. So thank you for this additional information. It's very helpful as we're thinking about and sort of launching this effort.
Thank you so much for sharing. It's awesome to be able to hear about the great work being done and just the approach and the steps that you took. It's very helpful and I think will help lots of your peers. Who else has a question or something to share? And I did keep putting the links in the chat box, but I will make sure they go in the Dropbox and with your topical call and in your newsletter. So don't worry if you're on the phone, I'll make sure those things get to you too. But who else has a question to share or comment? It can be for anybody on the call.
Yeah, this is Robert Killens here in Cincinnati. Last year, well, we started in late 17, but we conducted a research study called Giving Black Cincinnati. It was modeled after research that New England Blacks in Philanthropy had done in Boston. And we found some very interesting results from that research. But I don't have time to go in depth, but one thing that stood out in the research was that the overwhelming majority of African-Americans who would describe themselves as people who give back and who, you know, share resources, you know, and have done it historically, don't relate at all to the term philanthropy. That in their view, philanthropy is predominantly rich, white, and male. And in most representations that they see of it, people of color or blacks are the recipients and not the givers. And so that was, you know, very powerful. And so many individuals, even those who give five, in some cases, six figures, we did focus groups and surveys. Many of them shied away totally from the word philanthropy. And so, you know, what we've evolved to now that we've released the study is we're on a series of educational endeavors to kind of really change that narrative, or at least in the African-American community, work on a fuller understanding of what philanthropy is, that it is simply not as many people believe it to be, you know, and that it's there are opportunities for people of color, African-Americans in particular, to see themselves as philanthropists, not based on the predominant narrative or model, but in their own ways. And so it's been a very interesting experience that we're going to now, you know, we've developed a whole work plan around community engagement to change that narrative.
Robert, that's really helpful and really resonates. That was exactly the reason why we did the video series that folks can check out on our website, is really to redefine what it means to be, to what it means to give and what it means to love humanity, which is the root of the word philanthropy. And so I would encourage folks to, in addition to, you know, to the resources in the chat box, to check out those videos. They're very compelling, and folks are welcome to, you know, use them in any way that might be helpful to helping to broaden that definition of what it means to give.
Well, we've got about 6 minutes left in the hour. We certainly don't have to use every moment, but who else has a question for everybody? I will share, I think we have some resources in the Dropbox from Oakland Community Foundation on how they're partnering with advisors from diverse communities to really encourage trust-based and lift up leadership and with their professional advisor pool that they have as a partnered, as a treasured partner of the foundation. And they shared that in person at the topical call in person time we had at the symposium last year in San Francisco. So we can make sure to share that out as well. Who else has a question or a concern or something going on at their foundation? You're also quiet. I know that we have our three amazing speakers, Ted, Tremula, and Kelly, that all came here and joined us today and gave us their time. Does anybody have just another question for either of them? Or Ted, Tremula, and Kelly, do you have a question for the other community foundations on the line? You're welcome to ask them a question if you'd like. That's no pressure. I'm just making sure you see it's a two-way street.
I don't have any questions, but I do. I'm very excited that we have so many participants on the call, and I do. I would encourage folks, obviously, not only to access the resources, but as you move in your journey on this, to to be open to sharing your journey to the degree mm-hmm. that it's feasible. It's because that's really how we build the knowledge for the field and how we help people not have to start from scratch on this stuff. Because as I often say, this is, building the capacity and the muscle to be more diverse and inclusive of the communities that we represent is not an optional thing anymore. It's really something that we have to do. And, we need support in doing it. So hopefully you can be part of, you'll be on a call one day sharing your story, and that, and I think that will really help the field.
This is Kelly one more time, Kelly Nolan. And I would just say on behalf of June and myself, who are doing some work as fellows for the center, our hope is to build and expand a network of practitioners, of thinkers, of people that are grappling with more inclusive practice. And really, we would welcome being able to help you lift up your models, your questions, and doing what we can to leverage the National Center's platform and database in some of the work we'll be doing to shine a light on your work and to shine a light on really good practice in the field that is maybe getting some traction and having some impact and might teach others. So I believe our Catherine, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe I'll type it in the chat box, but I think it's fellows@ncfp.org. And welcome any follow-up anytime.
Kelly is correct that is fellows, plural, because there's three of them, three current fellows, at ncfp.org, and you're welcome to email them directly there. But also, if you're interested in this work, or if you guys have more resources or questions or concerns, our fellows will have great thoughts. They'll be sharing on this and have been doing research at our national forum. The last day to register with the early bird discount for the national forum in Chicago is September 20th. Just sneaking that ad there in case you want to talk to them in person there, but also they're happy to get your emails, and I'm happy to help connect you to anybody as well. And if you heard any of your peers or colleagues share today and you want to be connected directly to them or have further questions, please just let me know. Thanks everybody for your time. Also, Sharmila chatted something in just about the Pillars Fund that started as a giving circle at Chicago Community Trust and sent a link. So I will share out all those links and save those to the Dropbox. So please don't worry. And thank you all for coming and sharing today. We'll let you at 2:59 go on to your next 3 o'clock meeting. Thank you, Ted. Thank you, Sharmila. And thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for having us. Is this conference call recorded if I wanted to listen to it again?
It is recorded. It'll be in that like Dropbox link, and I'll send it to you.
Okay. Thank you, Katie. Have a good day.
Thank you.